stock market has been doing very well. Do you have any concern about any sort of bubble, and does this impact to any extent your own views of monetary stimulus by the Fed? Does it change at all?
Yeah, this is something we have to keep monitoring and thinking about, those potential risks. I don't see them right now. I see the the price to earnings ratios, I think, remain low by historical standards, and especially if you take into account how low the real return on treasuries is. It really seems like there's signs still of risk aversion in equity markets, not the kind of froth or bubbliness that might cause you some concerns. How one would end up taking that into account, I think, into formulating as a monetary policy be very challenging. But the good news at this stage, I don't see anything along those lines.
Can I ask about it? There seems to be kind of a building research on the effects of QE and the effects of Operation Twist and everything. Have you changed your idea of the effectiveness of monetary policy over the past 4 years as it's changed? And specifically with zero bound forward guidance and QE?
So on forward guidance, I see that as merely a continuation of conventional monetary policy, but we always were trying to communicate about where we saw the path of interest rates going in the future, and that's what provides stimulus, is really the arc of interest rates going forward. It's not where the interest rate is right now. And so monetary policy is about that kind of communication, formulating those expectations. We used to do it by changing the short-term interest rate in a given meeting. That would be a signal about what we're going to be doing in the going forward. Now we have to communicate largely, emphasizing on the words part, right? And that's so forward guidance, I think, is really conventional monetary policy, the zero lower bound. In terms of asset purchases, if you go back over my speeches, I've certainly talk through some of my thinking on this. I think there's a number of different factors at work. But I think the empirical work that we've seen has been very comforting to those like myself who came in at least with an open mind, or I would say, with a concern that these might not be effective tools. I think the empirical work seems to indicate that we are able to have a stimulative effect by to pushing down on appropriate longer-term interest rates and thereby providing stimulus. I think a lot of the challenges there, I think that degree of stimulus is something we have to keep measuring, keep tracking, because it might depend on how much we bought. So it's a tool we're still learning a lot about. But I definitely do feel it's been effective. And the work done here in the Boston Fed along those lines has been, I think, been very helpful also in shaping my views.
There was a paper, the first one at this conference, about the participation rate and the participation gap and how that kind of lags the unemployment gap. I wanted to ask you, directly, how the Fed, how the Fed should think about the participation gap and the fact that it's lagging. Maybe they might even want to look for, aim for lower, below the Nehru in the years ahead. How do you think about that as you think about substantial improvement in the labor market for QE and further afield, for the 6.5 threshold?
Okay, so lots of questions there. Mm-hmm. Right. let me start with participation. I wasn't able to be here for the first paper, but certainly it's a concern about how should we think about the decline in the participation rate from a monetary policy point of view. Something we should talk about in light of the work in that paper and others. But I have to say we have communicated over for quite some time now in terms of how we're doing on in terms of promoting max employment in terms of the unemployment rate. This is a metric that's well understood. We've got a long history about it. And I feel also that if you ask me what the long-run unemployment rate that's consistent with 2% inflation, there's uncertainty about that for sure. But I can pin that down to some kind of 5% to 6% kind of range. If you ask me what the long-run employment population ratio that's consistent with 2% inflation, my range of uncertainty is very large. And that's because it comes down to I don't really know what's going to happen on the participation margin. So how monetary policy would be able to affect that. So right now, you know, I think these are things we have to keep watching and learning. This is why we have these kinds of conferences, is try to keep ourselves informed and try to build our knowledge base. But at this stage, I think we have to, I think the way we're communicating through unemployment, the unemployment thresholds, talking about progress through the unemployment rate is the best way to proceed. You know, I think that substantial improvement in the labor market outlook, a lot of weight should be put on the outlook for the unemployment rate when we're thinking about that. Not where we are, you know, at a given moment in time, but what the outlook is for the unemployment rate. You know, I've been asked this before. I won't say, you know, people ask, well, what do you think substantial improvement in the labor market outlook means? And I think it's unfortunate that this term is sufficiently vague that allows for a wide range of interpretations, and so I'm going to withhold my own interpretation in favor of, I'm hoping, and I'd like to see the committee be able to come around together and formulate something more quantitative and more precise about what we mean by that, much as we did with the thresholds that we provided for the Fed funds rate. I think that the kind of precision we were able to provide with the Fed funds rate has been really helpful in making that tool more effective, whereas the lack of clarity on the quantitative easing side or the asset purchase side is not helping the effectiveness of that tool.
So if you get to a point where unemployment is down to your target of 5.5% or something like that, and EPOP is still at 58.5 or 59, in your mind, is the Fed fulfilling its maximum employment mandate?
I think it's a great question. And I don't think you've given me enough conditions by which to answer that. You know, I'm going to have to know something about what's happening with inflation at the same time. You know, when I've always talked about my the 5.5% or the 6.5%, I've always talked about it as a threshold. So that would still mean that there would be an opportunity to keep rates low below that. I think there's enough uncertainties about the long-run track of the employment population ratio where the answer to your question might be yes when we get there. So I can't say with a great deal of confidence the answer to your question is no, for sure I want to keep stimulative at that stage. I think it would depend.
Can you do a couple things to talk about your outlook for growth and unemployment, how it's evolved over the course of the last few months, and kind of how where it is today, and also given the outlook that you have, what are your preferences for the latest LSAT program and when you start tapering it off?
So I'll talk about the first piece and maybe not as much as you'd like on the second piece. So on the first piece, my outlook has remained relatively steady over the past, going back to the beginning of the year, that's when we all start to go out and talk about our outlooks at the beginning of the year. But my outlook has remained relatively steady over that time frame. I'm seeing a 2.5% GDP, real GDP growth over the course of 2013, accelerating slightly to 3% in 2014. Unemployment continuing to fall slowly, around 7% by the end of 2014. Inflation, I see pressures remaining muted, and 1.6% in 2013, 1.9% in 2014. Now, all of that is conditional on a particular monetary policy stance, and that's using the information that the committee has provided to the public about what it's planning to do with monetary policy. And it's basically. You know, as my charts today indicated, you can use what we said in the principal statement to sort out whether our stance is appropriate or not. So you look at the outlook for inflation, and 2 years out, it's only at 1.9%. Well, that means you could be more effective at mitigating the deviations of inflation from its long-run goal by adding accommodation. And that's why I've been suggesting that we could add accommodation, be effective for us to add accommodation. And the way I propose to do that is by lowering the threshold that we have right now at 6.5% down to 5.5. You know, I, in terms of your question about the conditions for tapering, et cetera, I'll defer on that question. I think that the important thing for us to be doing as a committee is it's not as important for us to be talking to all of you about all our individual views, but I think it's more important for us to be be coming together behind the, in the committee room and trying to come together with a clear idea of what we mean and what the conditionality is. The chairman talked about in the press conference that there are conditions under which we could reduce purchases or conditions under which we would add purchases. Policy is more effective the more precise and quantitative we can be about those things.
I want to come back to this earlier question. You've now had several months of experience of observing how these policies are working. Have your views changed at all?
On the cost side,
but on the benefit side, have your views changed at all about what you're getting out of the...
No, I mean, it's always hard to separate out trying to figure out the impact of a particular monetary policy action over a three-month period or a six-month period is very hard. So my views have not changed on that. I mean, what you're trying to do is always, you have an uncontrolled experiment you're doing. You've done monetary policy, but there's lots of other things happening at the same time. There's lots of fiscal policy stuff going on, for example. And you're trying to try to take the uncontrolled experiment and make it somehow a controlled experiment where you only got the monetary policy part. And that's why it's sophisticated research to sort it out. It's not like just saying, okay, I've followed the unemployment rate or the path of inflation over the last two or three months, and that tells me if it's been effective or not. It's not the way I can sort things out. There's a bunch of work that goes back to 2010 on the effectiveness of asset purchases that's helped inform my views on it.
Have you seen any progress with other committee members in getting, you know, this 5%, you want to lower the employment threshold to 5.5%. Have you seen other committee members come around to this? Do you think you're getting any traction on that? And also the March jobs report, how did that fit into your outlook? Did you see that as a particular setback for the labor market, or do you need to see more?
Well, it was certainly the rate of employment growth was lower than I had expected. The decline in labor force participation was more rapid than I had expected. I viewed it as an adverse jobs report based relative to my outlook for the economy. You know, in terms of how am I doing on 5.5%, you know, I've given speeches in my district about why I think this is a good policy. It's a committee. And I think we've all been on committees of various kinds. And when you have your own views, you go into the committee room and you try to make the case and see how it goes. And, sometimes it goes better than others. We'll see how it goes with this one.
Would it confuse the public at all if you changed the threshold so soon after having adopted it?
So this is a very good question. My own answer to that is no, obviously. And I think it's one of the tensions with the way we've done the thresholds is that there's a lack of clarity about what we're going to do at 6.5%. Especially given some of the considerations we heard at this conference. That lack of clarity is important because, you know, you run various economic models. What we do after we hit 6.5% matters for how stimulative the policy is. If the public thinks we're going to raise rates rapidly at that point, that means something very different than if we're going to keep rates low at that point. I view my lowering the threshold as a way to provide extra clarity because I'm saying, now I'm telling you, we're going to keep rates low even for longer. We're going to keep it to 5.5%. I think it would be very confusing for the public, and I would strongly advise against doing this, is if we ever raised the threshold. Because if the commitment is a one-sided one to say we're going to keep rates low until we hit that point, it's not saying anything about what we're going to do after that, which allows the possibility that we could always lower the thresholds. It's only confusing if you think of it as a target, which I tried to push back against earlier this afternoon, that it's a threshold, and I think it adds clarity to what we're going to be doing by lowering.
I mean, you talked earlier about getting more clarity on the asset purchase front. The committee seems to have been pretty determined about being vague about that. I mean, do you think that that's something that can be accomplished anytime soon?
You know, I have my, again, it's a committee. I have my views. I go in there and I argue for them. Clarity is something I value, and so I'll certainly be.
How would you pushing. Do it on that front? How would you clarify?
No, how would you clarify? I think being, you know, clear about the kind of conditionality of what is it we're looking for before we would taper? What is it we would have to see before we would add purchases? And I think being more. In general, I think just on the tape, because I'm being more goal-oriented about what we're trying to get at with this, I think would be helpful. Yeah.
Can I ask about the exit strategy? There's been some talk of that from Bernanke in the testimony. There was sort of some mention of that in the latest minutes. Can you give us an update on where the committee's sort of heading there, and also your personal opinion on how that exit strategy should be adjusted?
So, I think that the I'll talk about the second question, not so much about the first. I mean, I think the second question is, I think given where we formulated exit strategy principles in June of 2011, lots of balance sheet action since then. I think there are good things to be in terms of rethinking where we are now in terms of that is a good idea. I think that as we do that, it'll be important to keep in mind that what we do on exit has stimulative consequences now. So what I mean by that is, purely hypothetically, if we were to say that we're not going to be selling mortgage-backed securities, we're going to keep them until they mature, that has a different impact on the path of long-term interest rates, and so a different impact on how much stimulus we're delivering today than if we said we're going to start selling 3 months after we begin raising rates. So those are very different kinds. So I think as we formulate our exit strategy, it's not just about I think we should be thinking about it as a package of what we're doing in terms of accommodation. As part of that accommodated package is how we're going to exit. A slow exit provides accommodation now. Saying something about how that we're going to be slow on the exit will provide stimulus today.
Can I ask about your take on the spring swoon? I mean, is part of this just kind of superstitious the past few years? You thought we would have better growth than we did? I mean, where is your take on that? Or is there a reason more to be cautious on the economic outlook and on monetary policy?
I don't know the answer to your question, to be honest. I mean, it does make one worry a little bit about maybe there's some challenges in seasonal adjustment if we are always seeing an issue. I think it's always a good policy to be looking in terms of progress. I think looking year over year is a good way to go, because if you look year over year, so compare a March to a March and an April to an April, then you're going to get rid of some of the, if there are challenges in seasonal adjustment, then you're stripping that out because you're always looking at the same point in time. So that's the only, I don't think there's anything about spring per se. The only thing that makes me worry about is maybe there's a potential, and I have no idea what this would be. There's something about this particular recovery that is making seasonal adjustment challenging. That's the only thing I would think about in that vein. Otherwise, it's just, bad luck, which is also possible given how few observations we've had.
Do you have preferences on mix of purchases? Do you prefer MBS over treasuries?
No, I have no views on that. I think, I view them both as, forms of accommodation. And, in general, I think of us as having a mix of tools at our disposal to provide accommodation. There's uncertainties about the effectiveness of them all. It's good to diversify across those tools. I think the way we should be communicating more to the public is about the total accommodative impulse that we're providing, if you see what I'm saying. It's less about, we're talking a lot about what we're doing with each individual specific tool, and I think trying to be more clear about really what matters is the package, I think would be helpful.
Does the Fed have room to increase asset buying from its current pace if it needed to without disrupting the markets that it's buying in?
I mean, I think the chairman made reference to the fact that is possible in his press conference.
As it stands, are you leaning more toward increasing the rate or lowering the rate? I mean, given that you're pushing for more easing on the communication.
I've certainly indicated that I think it would be desirable to have more accommodation. I think we're leaning pretty heavily, not to say we couldn't increase, but we're leaning pretty heavily on the asset purchase tool right now. So my preferred way to provide that extra accommodation is, as I've indicated, through lowering the threshold in the forward guidance for the Fed funds rate.
Do you have any thoughts on the initial claims for unemployment that came out on Thursday?
I didn't understand what your question was.
Oh, what do you think about the initial claims for unemployment?
Oh, the claims.
Yeah.
I'm like everyone else. I'm hoping that I'm hoping that's the true marker of what's going on in the labor market. I think there's reasons to hope there that that's true. There's, again, this comes back to the seasonal adjustment issues that mm-hmm. are very challenging. We'll have to wait and see. Future will tell.
Could you just go back on what you said to Jonathan a moment ago? You're not
preferring extending the forward guidance because you think that's more potent? You're doing it because you think you're leaning too heavily on asset purchases?
I think, so that's too strong a term, leaning too heavily. I just, you know, we just have a mix of tools at our disposal, and I think that we've got one in train right now in terms of the asset purchases. We're seeing how much we're buying. I think we could make that more effective by being more clear about what we're trying to achieve on that. And then how would we add accommodation? I think there's certainly a number of possible choices, as I described in my last speech. But boy, taking one number and lowering it, that seems really easy. And so I'm a simplicity guy, so I'm drawn to that as a way to proceed.
There was this discussion this afternoon about the impact, about monetary policy potentially impacting potential growth, that through this whole hysteresis channel. What did you think of that argument, and how does that figure into your own thinking about policy? And just as part of that, are we at this point where we're starting to see hysteresis kick in?
Well, you know, the second question is one that, that there's going to have to continue to be ongoing work. I think it's hard in real time to know the answer to those kinds of questions. You just have to keep, there's going to be a lot of retrospective work digging in on that. In terms of what that makes you think in terms of monetary policy, I think when there is a tension between the two mandates, I think it might lead you to put more weight on promoting maximum employment relative to promoting price stability. There was an important conditionality in there when there is a tension between the two mandates. Right now, I think we could be helpful in terms of meeting both mandates by providing more accommodation. But when there is a tension on, as I think has been the case in the United Kingdom, they've faced more of a tension between their two mandates. The kind of work we heard today, which is arguing there's a bigger cost to unemployment than you might have otherwise thought, would lead you, I think, as a policymaker, to put more weight on mitigating deviations of unemployment from its long-run goal and paying maybe a higher cost in terms of having a higher inflation, allowing for more of a deviation of inflation being above its target.
Do you see any downside risk from inflation right now? There was talk about lags in wages earlier this week, commodity prices have softened.
You know, I think that, I think if I were to say which way my risks are tilted, I would be tilted to the downside right now, not to the upside.
Timing-wise, you all are headed toward a situation which you could be pulling back on asset purchases or moving toward ending them at about the same time that a new chairman is taking office. I wonder whether that complicates the task of shifting policy regimes.
Boy, you've got a lot of ifs in that statement.
You're going to stop buying assets at some point, and you're going to have a new chairman at some point.
So,
happen at the same time.
I think that, first of all, I hope the current chairman continues. I think he's doing an outstanding job, and I think he's fantastic to be able to continue to serve under his leadership. With that said, this is an institution that's been around 100 years. I think that our commitments, our credibility will withstand a change in chairmanship. So I don't see a problem with whatever policy choices we have in train with there being a change. No.
We've got a couple minutes left, so another question or
two. Can you say anything about this early League of the Minutes, you know, at this point?
No, I don't have anything to say about it.
Any concerns that you drew from
nothing to say.